from ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
Which office do I go to get my reputation back?
Violent criminals have to be segregated from the rest of society. They cannot be permitted to go out in this society and victimize honest, law-abiding taxpayers.
We are certain that we have the information to piece together to determine what happened.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
Just a drink or two can affect your driving. This man knows.
I learned it the hard way. I pulled out of this parking lot right in front of a guy. And the thing is, I saw him. I saw him coming. But I could have sworn he was a lot further away. I knew as soon as he hit me that it was my fault. I also knew I wasn't drunk. I only had two drinks. Normally, I wouldn't have had them, but I met a friend. We stopped off. I bought him one. He bought me one. And that was it. It just happened. You want to hear the best part? I'm dead set against drunk drivers, and here I caused a wreck because of two lousy drinks. It's really humiliating for a guy like me to have to go up in front of a judge on a thing like this. I don't even think of taking a drink from one week to the next. I've got three kids, and I think of how lucky I was that I didn't kill myself or somebody else. I'll guarantee you one thing, there isn't going to be a next time.
Even a little drinking can dull your judgment. Think about it. A public service from the Motor Vehicle Manufacturers Association.
Last Monday was the day that Raymond Donovan finally saw the light at the end of the tunnel.
A 2.5-year nightmare that began in September of 84 is now behind us.
September of 1984 was when it was announced that a grand jury in the Bronx was investigating charges that Donovan, his construction company, and seven of its executives had tried to defraud New York City's Transit Authority out of more than $7 million. The formal indictment came about a month later. The charges forced Donovan to resign as U.S. Secretary of Labor in March of 1985. The trial began 8 months ago and ended last Monday when the jury brought in a verdict of not guilty on all counts. Following the acquittal, the former cabinet officer walked past the assistant prosecutor and asked him,
"Which office do I go to get my reputation back? Which office do my partners go to get theirs?"
The trial was one of the longest in Bronx history, and Donovan can't help wondering what history will recall.
Will the public remember what this jury said today, or will they say Ray Donovan was the only sitting cabinet officer to have ever been indicted?
Donovan has called for the resignation of Bronx District Attorney Mario Merola and asked for a judicial review of how Merola treated the case. The indictment had come after the FBI had cleared Donovan of any wrongdoing and after an independent counsel had said there had been insufficient evidence to justify charging Donovan with any crime. The chief of the jury said after the trial that the charges against Donovan appeared to have been politically motivated and should never have been filed. There was a verdict this week in the so-called Twilight Zone trial in Los Angeles. The case involved the making of a 1982 movie, The Twilight Zone, and the deaths of three actors, Vic Morrow and two children. The three died when a helicopter used in one of the scenes crashed on them. The trial started last July, and when it ended this past Friday, the verdict was not guilty for the movie's director, John Landis, and four of his associates. Laia D'Agostino prosecuted the case.
"I'm shocked. I'm appalled. I'm disappointed because I believe that the conduct clearly was, as I said before, I don't want to sound repetitious, was about as reckless as it can get."
But as ABC's Jane Platt pointed out,
"Ultimately, the jury members seemed to side with the defense that this was a tragic accident, and just that, an accident. Nothing anybody could have planned, and nothing anybody could have foreseen."
And from director John Landis, relief.
"I'm very grateful to the jury, and I really appreciate their patience in what has been a trial."
A net result of the Twilight Zone trial, safety on movie sets is better than it used to be. There are about 2,500 people who have been held without bail over the past 3 years under a law allowing pre-trial detention of suspects considered dangerous to the public. That three-year-old law was upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court this week by a 6-3 ruling. Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz is among those who disagree with the decision.
"Like all criminal restrictions, it will hit hardest against the poor, the minority members, those who can't afford counsel. But But it will also affect the rich and the powerful, because the court has given law enforcement a tool virtually without constraint.
Daniel Popio of the Washington Legal Foundation believes more than that has to be considered.
Violent criminals have to be segregated from the rest of society. They cannot be permitted to go out in this society and victimize honest, law-abiding taxpayers.
Taxpayers in California have been outraged by the parole of Larry Singleton.
Mr. Singleton is like that garbage barge that nobody wants.
That's Harvard Law Professor Arthur Miller. And the reason no community wants Larry Singleton, even though he's done his time for the crime he committed, is because of the brutal nature of that crime. In 1979, Singleton was convicted of raping a 15-year-old girl and hacking off her forearms with an axe. Since April 25th, California authorities have been trying to find a home for the parolee, but each attempt was met with angry protests. The matter was resolved at week's end with this announcement from California Governor George Dukmejian.
The Department of Corrections has placed Singleton on the grounds of the San Quentin Correctional Complex. While he will not be incarcerated in the prison itself, Singleton will be under the 24-hour supervision of parole agents. Wherever he goes, he will be accompanied by these agents.
Singleton's parole runs for the next 10 months. After that, he's a free man and can go wherever he wants. Governor Dukmejian says if he had any control over the law, he'd like to see Singleton jailed for the rest of his life. A team of U.S. officials has been in Baghdad all week trying to piece together the events that led to the missile attack on the USS Stark in the Persian Gulf. This past Friday, Admiral David Rogers announced,
"We are certain that we have the information to piece together to determine what happened."
Part of the information came from Iraqi officials who had talked to the pilot of the plane which fired the missiles. At the time of the attack, the Stark was reported to have warned the Iraqi plane, but as ABC's John McQuethy tells us,
"Iraq says the pilot never received radio messages from the USS Stark. Would he have understood the messages? Yes, say the Iraqis. The pilot speaks good English and is very much a combat veteran with more than 1,300 hours flying time under his belt, 800 hours in the Mirage F-1, which he used in the attack."
Although Iraq refused to allow the U.S. team to speak to the pilot, Admiral Rogers seems satisfied with what his investigators learned, and he says he left Baghdad with some assurances.
"We've reached preliminary agreements, which I'm taking back to Washington and which will be agreed upon here, which will dramatically reduce the probability that would ever happen again."
There are no guarantees of that, but President Reagan says the United States will maintain a presence in the Persian Gulf.
"Until peace is restored and there's no longer a risk to shipping in the region, particularly shipping under American protection, we must maintain an adequate presence to deter and, if necessary, to defend ourselves against any accidental attack or against any intentional attack."
Meantime, the bodies of the victims of the Stark arrived at Dover Air Force Base. ABC's Vic Ratner was there.
"In a small crowd of the relatives of the men killed aboard the USS Stark, I see a man and a woman, apparently a father and mother of one of the victims, holding hands. Off to the side, one lone woman, maybe a widow, cries quietly as the caskets containing the bodies are unloaded from an Air Force jet by Navy pallbearers." Vic Ratner, ABC News at Dover Air Force Base, Delaware.
President Reagan told foreign journalists this week that he does not feel he is faced with any crisis as a result of the Iran-Contra affair, nor has he ever considered resigning because of it. And Mr. Reagan told them,
"I know the damage that's been done to my credibility, but it has not been by anything that has been proven. Quite the contrary. It has been the image that has been created by our own, particularly Washington Press Corps, in describing what took place."
But much of what took place is also being detailed by the witnesses that are appearing before the House and Senate committees investigating the affair. During this week's hearings, the panel heard from the man who ran the covert supply network operation in Nicaragua. He is a former Air Force colonel, Robert Dutton. At one point, Dutton told the committees that he had showed Colonel Oliver North an album of pictures of the covert operation.
"I showed him the album. He liked it very much and said he would like to take it and show it to his top boss."
Who did you understand Colonel North to be referring to when he said he'd like to take the photograph album to his top boss?
I understood he was talking about the president.
Another person testifying was a former U.S. ambassador to Costa Rica, who's been accused of improperly helping the Contras. Louis Tams told the committee he was ordered to set up a military front across the border in southern Nicaragua. And Tams said he was operating under direct orders from the National Security Council, the State Department, and the CIA. William Webster was sworn in as the new CIA director this week, with President Reagan telling the former FBI director,
"Judge Webster, we ask you to maintain this agency's high standards as you pledge to maintain those of the FBI. We ask you to lead the Central Intelligence Agency on to still greater service to our nation."
Webster said he knew he had a big job ahead of him.
"I come with profound respect for all that has been achieved, and with a deep awareness of the enormous challenges that face the intelligence community in the years ahead."
The U.S. intelligence community may or may not have scored a coup with the defection of a Cuban named Rafael Del Pino Diaz. He and four members of his family flew to the Key West Naval Air Station aboard a Cuban military training plane flown by the defector. ABC's Beverly Lumpkin says U.S. officials are excited.
A Justice Department spokesman said that Del Pino Diaz will be under heavy security for the foreseeable future due to fears that Cuban intelligence agents may already be trying to find the defector. Del Pino is regarded as a goldmine of vital Cuban military and intelligence secrets, and so the U.S. government wants to make sure he and his family are kept safe.
But correspondent Lionel Martin reports from Havana that some of the claims made by the defector may not be true.
A Cuban official said that General Del Pino had never been the deputy chief of the Cuban Air Force, nor had he ever held a high policy-making post in the Cuban armed forces. In announcing his desertion, the official Cuban newspaper said that Del Pino had been grounded earlier this year because of psychological stress. It said he had been assigned to the Historical Commission of the Armed Forces. Del Pino was a Cuban revolutionary hero who shot down a B-26 bomber during the CIA-sponsored Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961. The article called him a traitor. Lionel Martin, ABC News, Havana.
Cuba was in the news for another reason this week. Soviet Union began English language broadcasts from the island. Those broadcasts coincided with a Soviet halt to its long-standing policy of jamming Voice of America broadcasts beamed into the Soviet Union. U.S. Information Agency Director Charles Wick says that while VOA jamming may have stopped, other interference continues.
Jamming, however, continues and even has intensified for other Western broadcasts, including Radio Liberty, Radio Free Europe, Deutsche Welle, the Voice of Germany, and Radio Israel. Full Soviet compliance, we hope, will create an end to jamming of all and not just selected Western broadcasts.
The Voice of America's Russian language service celebrated its 40th anniversary this year. It's been jammed by the Soviets on and off during the time it's been on the air. The Soviets are fuming over a major breakdown of their security. Somehow, a 19-year-old West German managed to fly his single-engine plane across 400 miles of Soviet territory and bring it in for a landing right next to the Kremlin Wall. Matthias Rust was promptly arrested. The Soviets fired their defense minister and the head of their air defenses. The war between the televangelists heated up this week, with the first shot fired by the ousted head of the PTL TV ministry, Jim Baker. He accused the Reverend Jerry Falwell of taking over control of the PTL under false pretenses.
I'm convinced that they came here with the motive to steal Heritage USA and my ministry.
The next day, Falwell fired back.
When you consider the condition this ministry is in, to say that Jerry Falwell and this board stole PTL on March 17 is like accusing someone of stealing the Titanic just after it hit the iceberg.
Then Falwell took off the gloves as he related what he told Baker back on March 17.
"Not only did you have sex with Jessica Hahn, so did your associate, John Wesley Fletcher. And a third person, a member of your team, went in with the intention of having sex with her, and she was prostrate and on the floor and unable to respond and could not accommodate him. And I've learned, Jim, that 2 weeks after that in Hawaii, you went to that person and asked the question, did you get her too? And Jim, that made my blood boil.
Falwell rehashed accusations of Baker's homosexual activities, which brought a rebuttal from Baker and his wife, Tammy, that night.
I've invited those people to come public and prove these things. We've been having a hard time finding out who they were, and so I've been kind of digging around, and I asked Jerry Falwell to send me in a letter their names, and
he said no.
And so I just don't know what else I can do.
Nonetheless, Baker would like to start again, maybe in California.
I dream of building another city, maybe in California. And I dream about maybe going back on television someday. And I'd like the people to write me if they want me to. It's up to the people.
But as far as airing any more dirty linen in public, Falwell says,
we're not going to have any more of the soap opera. We're not going to have this ongoing saga forever. We're not going to have this blight on the Christian testimony of this country by verbal warfare. We are going to cease and desist from being involved in that.
Falwell says getting PTL solvent is what's important right now. A settlement has been reached between the Vatican and Archbishop Raymond Hunthausen. You may recall that the Vatican last year stripped the Seattle Archbishop of much of his authority because of his views on such issues as ministry to homosexuals. Now, the Vatican has restored most of the Archbishop's powers. Some American Catholic Church leaders had feared that the continuing rift might have embarrassed the Pope during his visit to the United States in September. Thousands of people gathered in what was left of the West Texas town of Zaragoza for the funeral of the victims of last week's tornado. Bishop Raimundo Pena delivered the sermon.
Today, we bid farewell to men and women who loved their family and would give their life for their children.
29 people were killed. Mary Lou Apodakis was among those who was spared.
I lose my house. All my friends. I'm lucky to have my kids and my husband with me.
Catherine McCain of the local Red Cross says they're trying to help as best they can.
We set up a shelter at the high school gym in Belmarais for a shelter, and the community has responded tremendously, all the surrounding towns, and we've started mass feedings and care for the people in the shelters.
Tents also dot the area as the residents of Zaragoza try to pick up their lives where they left them off before the tornado struck. Hermione Gingold died this week. The deep-voiced British actress had performed on the stage and in movies for years, but was perhaps best known for one film, Gigi, and the wistful duet she performed with the late Maurice Chevalier.
It warms my heart to know that you remember still the way you do.
Yes, I remember it well.
Hermione Gingold was 89. There was a change in the astronaut corps this week as Sally Ride announced her resignation. John Bascom recalls her career at NASA.
Sally Ride was America's first woman in space, but she was 20 years behind the Russians, who sent a woman up in 1963. She rode up twice, both times on Challenger, and then served on the commission that investigated the Challenger explosion. She had been scheduled for a third flight, when flights resume, maybe next year. Her background is in physics, and she once said being an astronaut was never a lifelong dream, so she'll join an arms control think tank in California. Her departure will leave more than 80 astronauts in NASA, 11 of them women. John Bascom, ABC News, Washington.
It was party time in the city by the bay this week.
Come one, come all, come over the bridge.
You're listening to Gene Anderson singing the Golden Gate Bridge song, which was written in 1934 by her mother as the bridge was being built. The song was dusted off for the bridge's 50th birthday, as were some memories about that time a half century ago when people such as Al Zampa found themselves helping to build the bridge.
It was wet and it was cold. It was miserable. And it was hard work. And the three didn't love it. Mm. We worked 8 hours a day for $11, 5 days a week, and we had 2 days to rest up.
Eleanor Haas remembers those days, too. When she was 12, she walked across the bridge.
I sort of feel like a little girl again, you know? It's amazing. And it's rather unbelievable that we're all here, and I'm here.
And the bridge is still here.
And the bridge is here, right.
Ms. Hawes and 250,000 other people were back on the Golden Gate Bridge this past Sunday as it was open to pedestrian traffic for several hours. For a while, engineers were worried that the bridge couldn't take the weight. In fact, all those people flattened the bridge's natural arch for a while. There was a familiar cry at the old brickyard in Indianapolis this past week.
Gentlemen, start your engine!
And with that, the Indy 500 got underway. When the laps were completed, Al Unser Sr. was in the winner's circle.
Lady Luck has to run in your way sometime, and this is one of them.
It was Unser's fourth Indy victory. Only one other driver, A.J. Foyt, has done that. A freak accident marred the race. A spectator was killed when a tire from one of the cars fell off and hit him. I'll have the stories of some super achievers when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Listen to the words and music of Savings Bonds 1942.
Any bonds today?
Any bonds today?
Any bonds today? Bonds of freedom, that's what I'm selling. Any bonds today?
Scrape up the most you can. Here comes the Freedom Man,
asking you to buy a share of freedom today.
Penny stamps today.
We'll be blessed if we all invest in the USA.
Oh, here comes the Freedom Man. Can't make tomorrow's plan.
Not unless you
buy a share of freedom today.
U.S. savings bonds were good then. They're even better now. Buy them where you work, through payroll savings. Now more than ever, U.S. savings bonds are a great deal.
It started with 8 million contestants, but when the 60th annual National Spelling Bee drew to a close, only 13-year-old Stephanie Pettit of Bethel Park, Pennsylvania, was left. And the word?
Staphylococci. S-T-A-P-H-Y-L-O-C-O-C-C-I.
You're correct. Stephanie won $1,500 and a trophy among her prizes and had words of thanks for her coaches.
My mother worked with me mostly, and my French teacher, my language arts teacher, helped.
How does it feel, Stephanie? Describe your feeling.
Disbelief. I can't believe this is me.
No doubt the same feelings were running through Wong Nu Tron as he accepted his diploma from the U.S. Air Force Academy. Just 12 years ago, Wong was one of those boat people who escaped from Vietnam. This week, not only did he get a diploma from the Academy, but he did it with a 4.0 grade point average, number one in his class. Wong said he was grateful for what he'd gotten.
My parents have always taught me, and my brother, that when you receive from a community or a nation or in any form from someone, when you have the chance and opportunity to make the contribution or the payback, that you should do so.
The former Vietnamese refugee says he'll pay the United States back by going on to Harvard Medical School and then serve as a doctor in the Air Force. And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week.